Hey now, and welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Jack, after the long Iowa derecho hit in the Midwest, how are you holding up?
I'm finally moved in at school, and I finally have AC, finally have Wi-Fi, power, everything. I understand now what Floridians go through when a little hurricane comes through. I had no idea what was going to happen. A lot of places not named Illinois were hit a lot harder than like Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, a lot of other towns. So yeah, it was a pretty eventful week last week, just seeing kind of the carnage that was left behind here in Iowa City. It was pretty cool, but not cool at the same time. Right. You know what I'm saying?
I've never seen that storms. Before. Yeah.
No, I've never seen that type of destruction.
Well, and that's the thing is my motto has been now, until I went to Iowa, I didn't think there'd ever be a hurricane in Iowa, but my motto has always been as a Floridian, wherever I go, wherever I live, no matter if it's in Alaska or Florida or California or Chicago, I'm always going to buy hurricane glass for my windows of my house. Always have the precautions. Because I know a kid in Cedar Rapids and their house, they have to replace all the windows now. And their neighbor had a tree fall through their roof. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. But, yeah, so because of the crazy storm that hit Iowa, well, in Florida, I was just chilling in sunny Florida while the storm was sweeping through Iowa and the Midwest. That's why we had a little one-week postage break. And speaking of another storm that hit through Iowa, let's talk about no football for the Big Ten this year. I'm in my all black. I'm in Kinnick Stadium right now because it's the only time all fall I'll be there. Jack, what's your reaction to it, and do you think they made the right move?
Nobody knows, like, what the right move really is. Everyone's got their own opinion about what the right move is. Look, like, the people who usually make the athletic decisions weren't the ones that made this decision. It was medical professionals. I read a tweet that said that there is possibly zero vote that ever took place, and this is all just something that they've leaked to the media. They just floated to see what the public reception would be. And obviously they got a pretty negative one, but – how do you float something like that when you're talking about, you know, sports that are meant to be viewed as amateur and, you know, with kids? These aren't like professional athletes. These are college athletes who are there to get an education and excel in athletics. And we're just floating rumors that carry such heavy implications to the press if that's true. Look, the whole situation's fucked up. I have no idea what is going to happen. The conferences that are still in play to play football, they're going to generate so much revenue and attention.
Yeah.
But they're also taking on tons of risks that these other schools and conferences are just not going to face. So nobody really knows what to expect. Right now, the knee-jerk reaction is, what the hell? This is stupid. But we really don't know what's going to happen until – you know, November, December. Like, nobody, like Notre Dame, North Carolina, they were all going virtual. So
I want to talk about the North Carolina thing for a minute to then go into Iowa. So North Carolina right now, because the ACC is still playing football, they're still holding practices with school going online, which to me is the biggest contradiction in all of college sports. Yeah. And this is why the NCAA is an absolute joke of a governing body of sports, because they don't even control their main asset, which is college football. They don't make the rules, quote unquote. So then you have your entire student body should not be going to class. They should not be interacting with each other, but you want the kids to go travel across the country to actually go and hit and have contact with other students from other schools in different regions. And that's deemed safe. And, you know, I get the argument, you know, among the Big Ten players and all these people saying, oh, you know, if there's football, we're actually safer because there's testing. But it's not a completely true statement because those kids are still going to class. Unless those players are held into a completely tight bubble of they're not living in the dorms, they're living in athlete-only housing, and all their classes are online, they're in danger either way. And it's not safe to do. So, you know, I'm absolutely disappointed and sad, and that's why I'm in my all-black Iowa gear because it's the death of Iowa football for the fall. And it's the only time we'll ever see this happen. But at the same time, to me, it's the only move to make. And the SEC is holding out because, let's be real, no offense to the Alabamas, the LSUs, but everybody I know who ever goes to those schools, they're going for one reason, and that's Alabama football. They're not going for the Alabama education. They're not going for the Alabama town. They're not going for any of that stuff. They're going for the Nick Saban championships. And that's what's driving a lot of the students in. And when you look at, you know, Duke's an exception because of how good of an academic institution it is. But when you look at the Kansases and all those of the world, the Alabamas, the main driving force for most people to even know the school is because of the athletic programs and the successful athletic teams. So I think the SEC schools are also playing the politics of it based off the region they're in. But I think all these conferences are bound to close up by September.
I don't know what to expect. You know, you see these conferences who haven't made a decision like the Big Ten kind of did in a hasty manner, and you think, okay, we see the reception of what people think. Like, maybe other conferences are reassessing. I truly have zero idea what's going on with college football. This is a terrible blemish, especially, what was it, the 150th year anniversary last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the 151st year, they didn't play. Like, that's crazy. I don't know what's going to happen.
And, you know, I think the NCAA, I think this is the biggest piece of karma that could ever hit the NCAA because they're in the worst situation possible. The NBA and NFL all have leeway and leverage because they're paying everybody to play the sport. They're employees. They're choosing to go to work, and they had the option to leave work. Mm-hmm. It's that simple, and there's no penalty if they don't play. There's no penalty if they do play. They just know they're at their own risk, and everybody knows what they're in for. But also, everybody knows there's millions of dollars on the line, and they're willing to make the risk to make that money. Well, the NCAA and every Power Five football conference wants to make the money, and they are treating these players as if they're assets and as their employees, not as if they're students.
And so treating the students like that, you see players like Micah Parsons from Penn State, who is a first-round talent, going to be a great pro. He just said, before the Big Ten ruling even came out, I'm not, like, playing. I'm not. Yep. Like, they're losing assets.
The guy from Virginia Tech.
Exactly. These players, like, I don't know who it was in the NBA. I think it was Tobias Harris. And I don't know if this is like what the Players Association for the NBA is actually called, but he was wearing the NBPA, the National Basketball Players Association. And I thought about it for a half second. I said, truly, they are the everything that this league is. So you look at that in the college athletics aspect, these athletes, these student athletes are literally everything.
What do you see when you drive by Kinnick? What's hanging up outside Kinnick?
You see all the posters of all the
former players.
Yeah, all the former great players.
All the students that made the teams great.
Yeah.
So, they're still cashing in on that. You know, you can still market. You know, part of the thing, too, is even if you're not selling jerseys, quote-unquote, with people's names on it or selling exact memorabilia or products with players' names, you're able to sell, oh, we have this All-American player. Oh, Brandon Scherff played for us. You know, like name-dropping players like that. Oh, George Kittle. Oh, George Kittle's coming to the game today. You're able to market off it. So even the players that are professional aren't making money directly from the university from it. The university's still banking on former players years and years down the road. So now it becomes a thing, too, where obviously these guys are athletes, and the true athletes want to compete no matter what. you know, guys like Justin Fields with the petition, and I respect it. And I respect what they're doing, too, to try to bring it back. I really do. But if you, the university is making the liability decision and worrying about the dangers of kids going to class, and they're, you know, University of Iowa created a form basically saying if anybody wants to go online, take sign on this form, and you're more than welcome to do it if you feel like you're at risk. And the university is encouraging that element of safety. But then they want to send these, you know, 60, 70 plus guys who are all students, be like, yeah, you know what? Because you play football and we need to make money off you, we don't care about your safety. And that's kind of the message I see it as, of you want to maintain the commercialization and the revenue of college football. And obviously millions of fans want it. Like, everybody loves college football season. It's the best. Like, to me, it's better than the NFL. And, you know, there's a lot of the way the NCAA markets it as a true game and people play for the passion of it and stuff, which is true. But at the same time, how can you focus on making millions of dollars off of these kids and then, you know, let's just say 30% of them get COVID, you know, these 20-year-olds, and then they have long-term effects, you know, 10% of them. It was all just to make the NCAA millions of dollars and they get nothing. And that's, to me, where there's a problem.
I agree. I don't have anything else to add with you. You said it perfectly. They're really – the NCAA, I tweeted it out. I don't think I got any likes or anything. I didn't give a shit. Like, it was literally all – it was once the conferences, I think, started to make these decisions on their own, I was like, the NCAA is losing all of its governing power. Right. Yep. Now, they're just realizing that they can do this without them and cut out that middleman. Like, they've inserted themselves in between the athletes and the teams and the conferences and tried to regulate it. And it, as a result, for the past 100-so years, it's really just stirred the pot in a really bad manner. So, I don't know. I think the NCAA is going to become reduced
as we
get further into this.
The thing I find interesting is when Fields started the petition and when the Pac-12 players made that kind of union-like statement.
Yeah, and they said they were all in this together. Yeah.
The first thing I thought of is Ed O'Bannon of UCLA, who did the first kind of type of thing of saying, you know, we deserve compensation and we deserve, you know, all these things as college athletes. And I see that movement, you know, finally kind of turning a page where college players could become unionized. And there could be real compensation that happens.
Yeah.
And what's scary, though, is I think the big reason why the Big 12, ACC, and SEC haven't pulled out yet is because I think to them, the last one standing becomes the new decision maker of college football.
Not even just like the new decision maker, but they're going to reap the most benefits out of this Corona season.
And it's scary.
At the end of the day, it's all about money. Money talks. Yep. Money drives it. I'm pretty sure we say like every fucking podcast.
Every show. Yep.
But like, truly, it's all going to come down to how much money can be made.
Yep.
This is completely off topic, and we're going to transition into the MLB quickly after this. But like, the MLB, I read that they were flirting with the idea of maybe getting a bubble for the playoffs.
Playoffs, yeah.
Now, the idea is, because there's $1 billion in revenue that the MLB can earn from this postseason with 16 teams in it. I get it's a different dynamic from college to professional, but it proves that this money, like, they'll do anything for it. It doesn't matter for anyone's safety. They want this $1 billion, and they want to get as much of this percentage of it as they can.
Well,
they'll go to a bubble if they need to, and they haven't. Right. The baseball's been the most lenient, I'd say, sports for these athletes to just do their thing. You look at the Cleveland Indians pitchers, like we were going to transition into, Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger. Both of them went out in Chicago when they played the Sox. They went out, I don't know, they hung out with like Plesac's friends or something.
No, they met up with like at least 8 people. Did you see the video he posted?
See the video.
Oh my God, Zach Plesac, this is part of the issue why the Indians now –
They initially denied a lot of it. They played the whole deny game. So, and I was like, how do you deny something like going out during a pandemic when Carlos Carrasco, who is a pitcher on
had leukemia,
had leukemia
and a year ago
pitched through it. Like, what are we doing? You guys are in the same pitching staff, the same bullpen, the same like camaraderie. And you're lying about going out during a pandemic, possibly threatening the life of like one of the more notable veterans on the team and in organization history. This guy's fought through hell and back just to pitch. Yep. And they're gonna go out there and go have a couple drinks, come back and lie about it. It's fucked up.
And they tried sneaking back into the hotel. Yeah. But they went out, they met up with friends who live in Chicago or whatever. They made all these plans. Then they go out, they get caught for it when they sneak back into the hotel or tried to. Mm-hmm. So then they get sent back to Cleveland. And Zach Plesac makes this Instagram video, a 6-minute video. It's disgusting. He's driving around Cleveland while he's talking in the video. He's driving around the city when he should be quarantining. That's why they sent him home.
He's driving around the city. About?
So you wonder, like, where's he headed? Like, where did he come from?
What was he even talking about?
He was saying, basically, like, you know, it was only a few people. We all wore masks when we needed to. We all, you know, were socially distancing at the restaurant. We, you know, like basically making excuses for all this. But he's like, the media is twisting it. They're making it worse. Like, you know, we're getting treated unfairly. Me and my teammate, he wouldn't say Clevinger. He just kept saying my teammate, you know, are very, you know, we're sorry, but he kept making excuses the entire time, basically trying to say we still did everything we possibly could to be safe. And then what happened was Plesac got sent home. Clevinger went on the team playing.
Oh, he tried to defend him.
Yeah. Clevinger stupid. Tried to go on the team plane, basically like lying about going out and stuff. I think that was part of the issue.
Yep.
So then they had a team meeting with them and they basically, you know,
they said, get these guys the fuck out of here.
They said, get out of here. Omar Perez said he was going, or whatever his name is.
His name is Oliver, I think.
Oliver, yeah.
Some wily 15-year veteran.
Yeah, and basically said, I'm going to quit the team if these guys are still here.
Yeah, think about it. The 35-year-old who's pitching to keep a job, make money, is saying, fucking kids.
Screw my salary.
These fucking
gone.
Kids are going to ruin my salary. Get them the fuck out of here or I'm leaving.
And to keep in mind, the Cleveland Indians have the best ERA in baseball at like 2.83 around there. They're killing it pitching-wise as a staff.
Yeah.
But what happened was in this team meeting, supposedly, he said he's going to quit. Some teammates tried to just move on from him and be like, we accept your apology, whatever. But like, they were still mad. Yeah. And then you had guys like Francisco Lindor, who's the man of Cleveland, and was like, I'm not good with this. We have Carlos. You know, like, we're trying to win. Like, I'm not getting sick. I'm trying to win a championship here. So you have leaders like that who are just like, screw you.
Yeah.
And to keep in mind, Clevinger is one of the best pitchers in the AL. Like, he is dominant. Plesac in his first three starts was pitching around 1.8 or something like that ERA. Like,
plus,
pitching really good.
The Indians traded Bauer away to the Reds before season even started because
and they didn't have Bauer. They got rid of Kluber too.
Yeah, Kluber. But Bauer had his own, like, not like off the field issue, but like he just didn't mesh with the coaching staff. Like, they weren't on the same wavelength.
He was tired of being
there. Just weren't on the same page. And obviously you can see Clevinger, Plesac, Kluber, whatever the hell. These guys just aren't all on the same page as the organization. And this team is only 4 years removed from a World Series. They're still a contender. They're flirting with two of their great young starting pitchers.
One of them is getting traded.
Not even playing. Traded? Yeah, Clevinger might go to Boston, which I could definitely see that happening. But Plesac, I don't know.
I think he could get cut, too. Honestly, maybe. I think he could. Because after that video, they were already mad at him. But when you have to go and watch the video on Instagram. Because when he does that, you're like, one, this is super immature.
Did he post it on his personal?
Yeah. Right, two, you're like, what's this guy doing defending what they did? Like, admit you went out. Admit that you endangered people on your team and you were wrong, and then try to go back and make things better with your teammates. That's what you need to do. Own it and take responsibility.
Well, he did do a post. He posted a picture, what is today, the 18th? A week ago today, saying life can throw some crazy things at you, but how you respond is the testament. What you may think is harmless can actually have consequential outcomes. And the lesson learned is this. The most important thing we can do is take care of each other, in caps, putting others first and having the character to understand why there is a greater impact if we are selfless. And he tags the organization in the picture as well. So, I mean, it took him getting sent home and realized that the team didn't want him to be there to post something like that. But you hate to see that. You really do. Especially with, you know, what went on with the Marlins initially with how they were infected. And then there was like a...
Or the Cardinals.
Or the Cardinals. Just in general. Like, there's been so many instances of what shouldn't go on.
Oh, and you know what Plastic said in the post? He said, you know, I just couldn't... He basically said something like, you know, I couldn't look at the same four walls anymore. That's what he said. That really pissed me off. He's like,
football
I can't.
Players who get concussions have to sit in dark rooms for hours. Like, God, dude, like, get over it.
He said, I can't look at the same four walls anymore. I just needed to go out and do something. Dude, I needed to leave the hotel.
You can do anything with coronavirus at home. Like, if you have a concussion, you can't do anything. Like, my point being, this guy's complaining about sitting at home and fucking, like, watching TV or playing video games or watching film, whatever, practicing his grips on his pitches. He can do so many things, okay? And he's complaining after doing that. Like, it's
makes
pathetic.
Me so mad because of the fact that there are people out there super sick with the virus. You know, people have lost their jobs from the virus. You know, I just saw a post on LinkedIn, a bunch of people who work for the Madison Square Garden company got laid off too. Like, it's happening everywhere, you know, whether you work a big job, small job, wherever, people are getting laid off. And you have these guys getting paid millions of dollars still to play baseball. All they have to do is play baseball, go home for 66 days plus, maybe another 30 if they're lucky. And they're complaining, I can't sit in my hotel room on a road trip to just, you know, hang with my teammates, eat food, watch TV, like what you said. And I have to go out because I need to keep my sanity. My normalcy is just ridiculous.
See, like, the MLB guys, like, have this freedom to do, or not essentially do whatever, but they have the most freedom out of the most, like, the professional.
They still travel. They get to interact with people from other teams still socially.
But you see the NBA, and these guys are in the bubble, and you have, like, guys like Matisse Thybulle or JaVale McGee or whoever else posting vlogs of these guys, like,
which have been amazing.
They're actually enjoying their time together, just playing basketball, being in this, like, this bubble, just being able to do what they love and have, like, the eyes of the world on them and whatnot. They get sick. So
yeah, no. And then it's interesting to see what players are doing to take advantage of the opportunity instead of ruining it. And before we move on to the next topic with the NHL, I just want to say I have a lot of respect for the Indians organization and this decision they made, because they could have said, we're selfish. You know what? They're staying on the team. We want to win. Terry Francona's hungry for a championship in Cleveland, I'm sure. And they could have said, you know what, guys? Slap on the wrist. Don't do it again, but you're back on the team. They shipped them back. They shipped them back to Cleveland, to the remote spring training location, and you know they're getting punished for their actions, and it could affect their service time too.
It will affect Clevinger's for sure. He misses,
yeah,
I think his free agency gets pushed back a year.
Yeah
just think about that, everyone listening. The night he went out and then, like, lied,
in Chicago
lied and then tries to get back on an airplane, like, just this one night of going out with Plesak caused Clevinger easily $100 million within the year. Just think about that. He has to get that contract pushed back, and now he has that blemish on his character.
Yep.
He has a blemish. Yep. Yeah, and he has to freaking hope that he keeps a healthy arm.
You have to stay healthy. You have to stay good. But then the other question, too, with the character thing, is if we give this guy $100 million, is he just going to be stealing it from us, not putting in the work, not, you know, and it brings all that questions. And then, you know, you go from that side of things with MLB, where there's, you know, a mini bubble for each city. But talking about NHL, 3 week zero cases. It's looking great.
Unreal. It said that within the past 3 weeks of the postseason going on in the NHL, they've done 20,000 tests, and zero of them have been positive.
It's been amazing.
It's awesome.
And to see them in the NBA, it's been incredible.
Really, and I truly think, especially in the NBA, you see a different brand of sport inside of the bubble. You see guys that weren't necessarily great players just start to show up. Like one guy on the Nuggets, Michael Porter Jr., like he averaged 13 points in the regular season, and then he comes out bubble and he's got like 24 a game.
He also was fully healthy too.
Exactly. See guys like that who just come back. You look at the NHL, the Hawks, I mean, they beat Edmonton. Nobody thought that was going to happen. You give them that young.
They beat the Knights one game already.
They beat the Knights more than
people expected them to.
Exactly. And there's a lot in the Canucks. The Canucks are giving the Blues a run for their money. The Blues are a great team. The Canucks are they're not expecting to even be in the postseason right now. And they're just happy to be in these type of games. They're giving a run for their money. So I think you're able to see, you know, people who weren't necessarily not that they were like diminished by the spotlight, but it just some of the moments seem so big for some of these guys that you just take all of that away. You put them in a neutral site and just play hockey, play football, play basketball. I mean, you allow them go out and play. Like Ben Simmons before he got hurt, shooting three pointers, wouldn't have never done that.
Well, also, he doesn't have the crowd necessarily there. But also,
exactly.
too,
That's
they, don't,
it,
they
yeah.
don't have the travel. They don't have the drainingness mm-hmm. of, oh, we have to go on a seven-game road trip. Oh, it's a playoff series. You know, I'm coming off a back injury, and I have to play, you know, like for hockey, I have to play, you know, the Canucks and then travel back to St. Louis and then fly back and then go back and forth and do that cross-country road trip.
And God forbid there's any flight delays.
Right.
Or like a derecho rolls through when the Hawks have to fly or anything.
Exactly. So you take a lot of those elements out, and you basically are just saying to the guys, go play.
Yeah.
Have fun and go play.
Exactly. It's the closest that these guys have felt like kids playing the sports that they've loved since they were kids, I think.
And you have the NBA coaches not even dressing up in suits. They're wearing
polo summer league suits.
Yep, they're wearing summer league suits. So you love to see that.
Yeah.
And
it's casual Friday every day.
So then speaking of the Hawks, what are your thoughts so far? What do you think they need to do to get another win tonight against Vegas?
It's Crawford. I mean, that's why it's my background. The guy right here. I mean, he's two cups. The guy proved last game he got credited with 48 of 49 shots being saved. He's got it. He is the man. Yeah. There is a statistic I could pull up. I don't have it in front of me, but it was the high danger shots faced in the postseason so far. Crawford has faced like 92, and the next closest is 70. Okay.
Wow.
Now the Hawks have been. They have a winning record in the postseason right now. Maybe they're down one game. I don't know. I can't do math in my head quickly. But
they're 4-3.
4-3. Look, that first game against Vegas, the Hawks overstepped twice and they went down 4-2, and that's that.
Or 3-3.
They're 3-3. Game two, a little closer. Game three was the heartbreaker. That one was either way. That could have went.
Yep. Okay.
The Hawks win that. Then they win this last game. It's a 2-2 series. Way different. Way different.
3-1. But 3-1. The way I look at it, too, is when you have guys like Taze, Kane, Crawford lifting them up and saying, we've won championships before. In the playoffs, we've scored last-second goals in 15 seconds or less, you know, to win games or tie games or whatever it is. Like, I think when you have that leadership and that experience there when you need it, I think they can pull anything off.
Oh, definitely.
That's my
especially with the rest that they had. Anything's possible.
And you have a guy like Crawford, yes, everybody was ripping on him the first three games for letting up all the goals. But to keep
in mind – the
guy
didn't even have a training camp. He walked onto the ice and faced NHL shots and won games.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see how many other NHL goalies can go do that. None of them did. Only Corey.
And part, and like, you know, some of these games, you know, the offense actually has to score goals where it's not necessarily even, you know, on Crawford, where if you, like you said, he has, there have been so many shots that have been shot against him. One's bound to go in every, you know, 12 shots that, you know, I mean, if you think about, you know, the game of, you know, the odds, and when you watch him save the puck, it is absolutely unbelievable. Some of the saves he's made, because some of the goals that, you know, the Knights or, you know, even in the first series, the Oilers made, the ones that went in sometimes weren't that impressive. It was the shots where you expected them to go in and he somehow saved them. That's been the beauty of him this year.
And even still, Connor McDavid isn't playing in the playoffs, and he's still top five in points scored. So it just proves that someone like Connor McDavid, so dynamic, can take over a series. And you saw it in game two, I think, of that three games. He took it coast to coast and put it bar down on his backhand and just told everyone, hey, I'm Connor fucking McDavid. I'm basically Wayne Gretzky right now. Corey can't do anything. Nobody can do anything about that. So, yeah, he let in a couple of goals. Whoop-de-doo. Okay, he's playing Vegas right now. He's doing a damn good job, I'd say, because Vegas is definitely more of a team than the Hawks. The Hawks are outmatched in this matchup 100%.
But what I believe with the Hawks this year, I believed it from the start since they announced that the Hawks were going to be in the bubble, is – I don't normally go for storylines or create storylines and make that like a thing that I that can actually help a team win most of the time. But the thing that I look at is when you look at the young guys, the young legs, which I keep saying, the veterans, and a veteran goalie like Crawford, who anything's possible. And you look at the veterans on this team who are used to being the favorite to win. It's fair to say, except for the first championship when they were young coming up. But, you know, most people are like, okay, the Hawks are taking that. They're taking this series. They're taking this game, whatever. This is the first time where they're really being challenged as the underdog, where they have a huge chip on their shoulder. New coach, new teammates, whole new environment, whole new roles as leaders too. They're not just the studs that are carrying the team who are forced into leadership positions. They're the proven vets who are the stars of the team, faces of the franchise, who are, you know, keeping them alive. That's what it comes down to. And I think this whole staying alive mindset is perfect for them. I think it's the perfect grit and grind of this team. They need that.
I couldn't have said it any better. I'm so excited for tonight's game.
Oh, yeah, me too. What sucks about being on the East Coast is it's a 10:30 game, so it's going to be a late night tonight.
That's brutal. I couldn't imagine. Like, I think one of the Hawks games against Edmonton, one of the first ones, was like a 9:30 drop. It was terrible. I watched the whole thing. I grinded through it. I regretted it.
You've got to grind through it.
I think – that it counts that, like, that's my playoff moment. Like, that's my playoff push, just grinding through these 9:30 puck drop games. It's the least I can do. Like, I'm not on the ice. I'm not playing. I'm not sweating. But I'm keeping my eyes open.
If you have your eyes open and you have if you have some popcorn by your side.
And if you have some heart, that's all that matters.
And if you have some heart, that's all that matters. And now talking about changes, not just for the NHL but in the NBA – we're finally free of Boylan.
Humpty
Jim Boylan is gone from the Chicago Bulls. And this has been something from the start of the NBA season. Everybody knew he was going to be gone. Like, there was no question. Foreman was going to be gone and Boylan was going to be gone. But now the question is, who's going to replace him? First, I want you to recap your thoughts and experiences with Boylan as the head coach, and his 5 years in Chicago as an assistant head coach, your thoughts, your wishes, what your disappointments were, and then I'll go into it. Then we'll go into who we think should replace him.
So I entirely don't think Boylan's a bad coach, okay? I think he got too wrapped up in the thought of being a I don't even – like a molder, a sculptor, a creator of these players. And he took it to a really anal degree where he would play players in positions – not even positions, but in moments or – just times that didn't make sense.
He was like trying to be a dictator.
It wasn't a dictatorship. It seemed like he was a JV coach trying to give everyone minutes to get everyone, like, not just a shot, but like a chance to prove themselves on the floor. Yeah.
And develop a little bit, but he didn't develop them the right way.
No, you look at a lot of the NBA rosters, there's a handful of guys that don't play every night because coach just didn't put them in. That's fine, okay? But it felt like Boylan had to unload the bench, the cupboard of all of the toys and goods, for no reason. Like, Cristiano Felicio, I'm done with him. I don't want to ever see him on a basketball floor again.
Agreed.
Period. I'm done.
Markkanen, Markkanen, this was the first year where I really was like, why is he on the team?
Yeah.
And it makes me ashamed to say, because when he first came into the league,
he was nasty.
I'm like, make him the new franchise guy. Yeah. I'm totally cool with it. And now I'm like, kind of like, you know what? It will take a lot for me to watch, but I'll watch him on the team one more year and let him prove himself under a new creative coach. And if he can't play after that, ship him, don't sign him again, whatever the case is. But then, like a guy like Chris Dunn, we get this guy in the trade for Jimmy Butler. You know, this is one of the most frustrating trades ever, and this goes down to the Bulls' leadership, you know, under Foreman and Paxson. You ship a guy off like Jimmy for guys to me who are like a mix between a starter and a borderline franchise guy, between like a Dunn or a LaVine as a prospect, because they got them as prospects. But to me, if you were going to get a young guy on the Timberwolves, I would have gone after Wiggins at the time. That's who I would have said, Jimmy and Wiggins. Like that. They're,
would you, know, you rather have Wiggins or LaVine though? Like looking at it today. Okay.
Looking at it today.
Because I think LaVine, ever since he tore his ACL and he, like, after the dunk contest hype and everything, he's grown as a player to be, like, an actual scorer.
Yeah.
Well Wiggins, always been that scorer, but he's got an issue of being just
a selfish player.
Yes.
He's a selfish player, and Wiggins is all about stats.
Yeah.
Where, looking back on it, I kind of say if it was Wiggins or LaVine, it's kind of a draw now. But at the time, I would have said Wiggins, because at the time when we got LaVine, I looked at him as a dunker. That's all I saw him as.
Same. Everyone just saw him as the guy who could dunk.
Yeah. And I never understood how a trade for Jimmy, Dunn, and I was hoping Dunn was going to be the stud out of the two. That's what I was banking on. Chris Dunn is an absolute – he ain't bad.
I like Chris Dunn. He led all point guards in, I think, steals or something this year. I like it. That's great. Look, if he's not your number one, and I don't think he's your number one, Kobe White's your number one.
That's the guy who's the only bright spot. But here's the thing with LaVine, is I look at LaVine as a stud for a team where games don't matter. Where unless you look at him on a winning team, if he can win games and score at that rate, averaging 25 or whatever the case is, I will say I love Zach LaVine. But until he has a winning team around him or can show he can win games, you know, I used to compare him before to like a cheaper version of Devin Booker. But Devin Booker proved to me in this bubble that he can win. He cares about winning.
Devin Booker's
a bad man. He's nasty. So when I look at LaVine, if he can put up 25 on a team where there's nobody to score 25 on, you know, like he's the only guy that can do it against any competition, I don't value him that much. If you pair him with another guy who can score at an efficient rate like he has been doing, where Zach LaVine might have to be the second guy sometimes or whatever the case is, but you're winning games, I would – praise everybody over Zach LaVine. But until then, I'm not sold. And that kind of brings me with Boylan, which is he had, you know, part of it is Otto Porter got hurt. You know, they were always dealing with injuries the last 2 years where he never could kind of cement a kind of specific lineup. It was always changing, like what you said. But he also couldn't really implement a hardcore philosophy that the team could actually believe in and play around.
I think his philosophy was just growth. And the team was like, dude, I don't want to like just focus on growth. I want to focus on winning.
Winning, right. So when that kind of comes into question is, with Boylan, what was the purpose of hiring him? Because he cares about growth. You know, he cared about growth. Yeah. But he never cemented an offense that could close out games, because that was the biggest problem this year with the Bulls, is they were beating teams going into the fourth quarter or in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left in the game, and they never closed because he'd pull out a guy who was on fire, Like, there was one game where, like, Levine, I was going to say that. Levine was lighting it up. I forgot who they were playing. But with, like, 3 minutes left, he wanted to sub out Levine. And Levine's like, I'm not going out. Like, you know, he started cursing at him and stuff like that. But he's like, this guy's an absolute clown. And so, you know, with me, Boylan's just kind of the – to me, Boylan was the guy of buying us time until we got new management. That's the way I looked at it, is I think the Bulls front office didn't want to give up on the Fred Hoiberg dream, so they kept Boylan around to try to develop the guys a little bit more or emphasize youth, and it didn't work. I think that's kind of what it comes down to.
I couldn't tell you a single candidate for the head coaching position, though. I have zero
clue. So I've thought a lot about this. I've thought – an interesting guy, if a contender wasn't interested in him, is Mark Jackson.
Oh, but Mark Jackson said some shit. He can't come back and coach.
But here's my thing with Mark Jackson, which I think would be interesting. If you have a guy like Levine, who's an offensive stud as of now on a team that doesn't have a lot of, you know, star pieces where you could say, like, you know, right now it's Levine's team, you can say. You have Coby White. Then you have, you know, Dunn, who's a defensive guy, so it doesn't matter. But if you have Markkanen, who could actually score, and Otto Porter, who's a great scorer when he's healthy, Mark Jackson could develop those guys but also win games while doing it. That's what interests me about him. But another guy who just got fired is Alvin Gentry, where people say he's a bad coach. Like, I talked to a friend who works in the league, and I don't think he's a big Gentry fan either. But I think Gentry is a guy who is an established head coach, cares about winning, is going to do everything he can to win a game. I think he's a guy who could be interesting, who, you know, the Zion thing didn't work out, or, you know, I think the biggest thing is they just didn't win enough in the bubble, so they fired him. But I think he could be an interesting guy in Chicago, because for me, I don't want the Bulls doing all these project coaches anymore. I want them to get a guy who's been a head coach.
That's
what I care about.
This new guy is definitely putting them in a new direction than this shitty one they've been on.
Yeah. There's only one coach who's an assistant coach that I would be interested in, which is he coached for the Spurs from 11 to 2019. He is now with the Sixers on their staff, which is Ime Udoka. And he proven assistant, you know, developed real talent. Like, he was with the Spurs from 11 to 19. That's Kawhi tenure right there. Like, he was on, you know, those teams, DeJounte Murray, like, those guys. I think he's a great candidate. I know another guy who's in the talks is the assistant coach from the Nuggets. I don't know his name.
I saw him, too.
There's been a lot of talk, and I think he could be up for it because of the Nugget ties. But another guy that I think would be interesting, even though I'm not the biggest fan of him, is Kenny Atkinson, who was the Nets coach. He led into the playoffs last year with Russell.
That's who I saw. Yeah,
with Russell and LeVert and all the Jared Allen. So
is he like a grittier type of coach? I don't know what he is about him. I don't even know. But I'm gonna look it up. Like, what he's even about.
But guess what? They won games. They made it to the playoffs last year, and they had a guy like, think about it, like D'Angelo Russell. He's a scorer. He's a guy who, you know, by himself can't do much, but he had a decent team around him, and they, you know, went for a playoff run where. I could see Kenny Atkinson doing the same thing with Levine, or for me, is depending on where this draft lottery goes, if we get a high pick, I would trade Levine for something and then draft well. That would be my thing. Or trade the pick for a proven guy.
If the Bulls number seven again, I'm done being a fan.
I said seven, or if they go seven or eight, anywhere in that ballpark or worse, I'm done. But also, too, like, you know, we've lost out on Gary Harris and some of those guys when we trade the pick to the Nuggets and the Doug McDermott trade. So it's just like things like that where we were so unlucky. Him and Nurkic, I think we lost out on drafting.
Yup.
Which just drives me insane. And so the big thing for me is the job that the Bulls' new management has to do is make the team look good enough where a max free agent in 2021 will want to come. Make it a free agent destination. We lost out on Melo. We lost on D Wade and LeBron barely, and we had a great team there. But if you can just pair LaVine, frame him as a star, pair, you know, Markkanen as a star, whoever we can draft, like if we can draft LaMelo Ball number one or whoever, show that this is a place where we can win and we can have free agents come here and be stars. And not have the Rose or Jordan ghosts kind of hanging over the franchise anymore.
What offseason were you thinking of the Bulls paying a mega contract?
I think 21 is where there's some big guys.
Okay. So I'm just trying to look at to see who would – so would that be like Chris Paul, technically LeBron if he opts out of his player option?
It's not.
All right, but there's Gordon Hayward, Mike Conley, yep. Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Otto's contract is up, Drew Holiday, Rudy Gobert, AD, Andre Drummond, Steve Adams, Giannis, Aldridge, Batum, Oladipo, Hardaway, Schroeder, Portis, Danny Green, Oubre. There's some names.
There's some young guys. And the thing is, if you give a big deal to one of those young guys, like an Oubre or somebody like that, where you can then – say 2022-23, big name coming out. We've got this guy. We have LaVine here. We have the pieces. We have the pieces and the culture. They need to build the culture and the pieces. And that's the biggest thing. And, like, to me, if you get a guy like LaMelo Ball there, who, to me, is my favorite player in the draft, absolute stud, he would be perfect. He would be absolutely perfect. Have him and Colby just kind of pair off each other. And then – I don't know how well him and LaVine would play together. I think because LaMelo's a scorer at heart but knows how to make plays. I think if they played well together, it would be a deadly offense there. If they could compete. If they could compete and win games, it would be deadly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the thing that kills me still is getting rid of Jimmy Butler. I did not want him to leave. He was the bright spot. He's the grit, grindy type of guy that Chicago needed. He was a stud, underrated stud, and he easily could have gotten a free agent to come if we kept him and kept Tibbs or whoever, even brought in a new younger coach or whatever, but not Fred Hoiberg, who basically says, hey, guys, let's watch SpongeBob today to inspire you with Pau Gasol in the locker room and Dwayne Wade. It's just like,
yeah,
it's awful.
It was a joke.
That was awful. Right. ISU coaching.
So let's take a look at the bracket really quick. We're just going to go through I'd say the first round just to see, because I mean, I can't think that far ahead. I don't know what's going to happen. So Lakers Trailblazers, it's a fun series. I think the Lakers win,
in five.
Yeah.
That's Dame, my call.
Dame gives them a fun time.
It's going to be fun to watch, but yeah. Lakers are going to pull through.
Rockets Thunder.
I'm calling Thunder here.
I like the Thunder.
Everybody's saying Harden, and I see it, and I'm like, okay, Harden's a great scorer and everything. But when you watch that Thunder team, it's my favorite team in basketball to watch right now. Them and the Miami Heat have been my two favorite teams all season to watch because the Thunder are just a cohesive, play-together team. Chris Paul, Shea Alexander, and then you have like the guard Steven Adams. It's just a great mix of guys there. They're just a true full team. And then Nuggets Jazz. So I think this one's an interesting matchup because you have Donovan Mitchell, who's a scorer, who's electric, and you have Rudy Gobert, who's a great defensive player. But I think the Nuggets pull through on that because they're so deep. That's kind of what I get. How about you?
I like the Nuggets personally just because of Monte Morris, and I also like Jokic a ton, I think. Big guys in basketball is good for the brand.
Yeah.
And to see a big guy like him moving around out there. He's a really bad defender, but he's a great finisher. Clippers, Mavericks. If Luka's ever to go off and take over a series, it'd be now. I don't think it might
come the first to game.
Fruition. Yeah. I don't but think it's going to go through.
I think they need another year or two. To do it. I mean, Luka's been unbelievable. He's one of the top five players in the league, in my opinion. But I think the Clippers take it. But I think the Nuggets-Clippers matchup, if they make it to the second round, will be a fun one to watch. And now moving over to the East, Bucks-Magic. So the Magic took game one today.
Yeah, I watched that. And I don't watch much basketball. What the hell?
It was It was so great to see.
Yeah.
But I think they can maybe win one more game. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like when you have a player like Giannis, if you lose to the Orlando Magic, which if they were in the West, wouldn't even be a playoff team. Like, okay. You know, this is a joke, and Giannis will get the hell out of Milwaukee if he loses in the first round. Heat Pacers, Heat won today. I take the Heat all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals at least. Celtics 76ers, I think Celtics take this.
Yeah, if Ben Simmons is there, it's a different series just because the Sixers at home this year were unbelievable, but away they were god-awful. You put a team like that led by Ben Simmons, you know, in the bubble, pretty good team. If he was there, it would have been a run.
Even that, though, I just think the Celtics are just such a, again, a cohesive team. They play together. Everybody has a role on that Celtics team that I like. With Tatum, Kemba Walker, there's a new energy, too, I think, since Kyrie left, where there's kind of now like this is our team, where we're not kind of like, oh, Kyrie's the face, even though we don't consider him a leader of the team type of thing.
Yeah.
So I think I picked the Celtics, even if Simmons was healthy. And then Raptors Nets, I mean, Raptors are going to win that.
Yeah.
And I think the Raptors are like – they're another fun team to watch, kind of like the Thunder too, where it's just they're winning as a team.
Yeah, they are a very just solid team.
Yeah. And, yeah. And right now, I just saw quickly – quick score was the Rockets are currently – there's 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter tonight for the Rockets, and they're winning by 15 points. So the Thunder need to step it up if I want to be right.
Yeah, well, your Chicago White Sox have already taken the 3-1 lead over the Tigers in the bottom of the second. So I guess our bats are coming to life again.
Well, speaking of the White Sox,
we'll just do a two-minute baseball talk because it gets hot.
Yeah. Just because of the – okay, here's the thing. I watched the Tigers-Sox series last week. You guys were missing fly balls that were the easiest things. Like, I saw one player try to dive for a ball, your center fielder. I don't even know who it was at the time. It wasn't your star one. Yeah, it was him.
Yeah, I hope you don't chirp him. He's a freaking defensive animal.
He missed, like, three balls in the outfield.
At least he tries.
What? It's your job to try to catch the ball.
No, Adam Engel, if you've ever watched any Sox games, anyone that's a Sox fan
missed the ball. He missed the ball.
He is a late-inning defensive sub. No, all right. He's also
hurt. This was in the seventh inning.
He's also hurt right now, so I don't know what's going on. The Sox are winning, first off. Second, the Cubs have lost the equivalent of, like, 12 or 13 games in a row right now.
Hey, we're the best team in baseball. So
yeah, best team in baseball trending in the, like – wrong direction.
Hey, we have losing streaks sometimes, but we're gonna get hot again with our record.
I hope
we're winning games.
Hey, I hope. You know
what? At least we're staying healthy. That's all I have to say. We're staying healthy. Tim hit a
leadoff home run again tonight. He's back. We're buzzing, baby. We just needed Timmy.
Learn to catch fly balls. That's all I have to say. And talking about another thing outrageous, we'll move over from baseball because we'll save that for the next show. More Sox Cubs talk is how outrageous are the new Space Jam uniforms that LeBron just leaked. One, he's wearing number 6, literally because he doesn't want to flat out say, I'm going to wear number 23 and copy Michael Jordan. That's why he's wearing number 6.
If you can't wear 23, don't even do it, LeBron.
Right.
Space Jam was cool. Nobody asked for a second.
No.
I didn't.
I only wanted a second if Michael Jordan was still in his prime doing it. But guess what? That would have been 25 years ago and I wasn't even alive.
Damn right.
So I don't want to see another one.
Exactly. It's stupid. This should be such a short topic. The jerseys are ugly. Like, nobody. If the movie's a
chasing the ghost of Michael Jordan.
If the movie's a bust, that's a huge blemish on LeBron's career.
Well, you know what's hilarious too?
In my opinion, at least. I think that's a huge blemish.
Well, the thing that's funny about it is the fact that LeBron's thinking about the fact that all the parents his age or a little bit older grew up with the first one, so they're gonna die and like want to pay to see the next one, see another one or to take their kids. But the thing is, all those parents who love Michael Jordan and the first Space Jam, who grew up with in the Jordan era, who are the ones who preach now saying Jordan's the best player of all time, are gonna then say they're not gonna watch it.
No.
And they're gonna show their kids the first movie and be like, "Here, we'll
go on." This is what Space Jam is.
Yeah. So when the kids are like, "Oh, I want to watch LeBron," they're gonna be like, "Kids, LeBron's not the GOAT. It's MJ." Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be a flop.
Plus, I'm pretty sure like Space Jam, the VCR, I'm pretty sure that's one of those like novelty, expensive VCRs that you can sell on eBay for like $80.
For sure.
I don't see that happen in a Space Jam 2. I know they have a ton of cool celebrities in it. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care.
Bill Murray is good enough for me in Space Jam. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, like I don't care. So.
And now, you know, since the jerseys were basically memes, let's go into the meme of the week.
All right.
So you can show yours first.
I'll show mine first. Mine's brief. This goes back to the NHL. This guy was a replacement referee. I think maybe someone took a puck to the neck or to the nether region, as Steve Stone would say. I don't know, but this big happy camper had to come onto the ice, and needless to say, he was pumped up to be there. He looks like an English bulldog ready to rip someone apart. I wouldn't want to mess with him if he was my referee on the ice.
He's amped. He's ready to call a game.
I'm as amped to watch the games.
I'd be shocked if he didn't try to hit somebody on the ice. He was ready to knock someone out.
I don't understand how refs – they can't all agree on the calls that are made during a game, how they don't just get into it. They just be like, "Dude, your call was so blatantly wrong. Like, I'm going to kick your ass on the ice right now." I don't see, like, how – like, Angel – what's his name in the MLB? Angel Hernandez, the home plate umpire? He's fucking terrible. People want him dead every time he umps. Why don't other people on his crew just fucking tell him, "Angel, chill out, dude. Like, you're terrible." I don't know.
But send him to an eyeglasses place to get his eyes checked.
They need that English bulldog guy in the MLB to calm down a lot of these managers trying to get all testy. All right, now do you want to explain your meme of the week?
Yeah, so as you can see, the title is "When You Ask Mitchell Trubisky to Help You with Your Proposal." So this is – we're going to watch it, and then I'll explain it. Not much to explain, though. So the guy, ready to get the ring, tosses it up. Right into the water. Diamond engagement ring. Just like Mitch Trubisky. When you ask Mitchell Trubisky to throw the ball downfield to Allen Robinson, overthrow, underthrow, throws it like how this guy did with an engagement ring.
Well, the only defense I have for Mitch here is this is an August 8th post. I don't know if maybe Mitch's throwing motion was fixed by August 8th. Or because I've seen a lot of speculation on Twitter that it's footwork or his throwing motion or something's looking better.
Until he's playing in a game, I'm not going for any of that. Because you can do the fancy footwork. You can do the
seven on seven
throws.
Two-hand touch.
He doesn't have the pressure of winning right now. What's going to be hilarious, too, is they're going to play him for a game or two. And no matter how good he plays, they're just going to be like, "Yeah, sorry, Mitch, we're paying Nick Foles all this cash. You got to go."
Yeah, I'm curious. I got a really weird feeling deep down that they're going to sign Mitch to cheap. Not something that a quarterback would usually sign.
Oh, but he'll get a cheaper deal, but it might not even be in Chicago. It might be somewhere else.
I don't know. I think Nagy loves him.
What do you mean? He had no trust in him.
I think Nagy loves him.
He didn't even draft him.
It's not even
his guy.
I know.
You made the point before that it's not even his guy.
I know it's not his guy, but he also said when he was in KC that they liked looking at Mitch, and I'm like, okay, sick. Hold on. By the way, before we get off, speaking of Nagy, I saw a video of him when he was a quarterback in the Arena Football League.
Yeah.
dude, it was the Arena Football League, like Super Bowl. He was the quarterback.
Was he against Kurt Warner?
No. He was fucking crazy as a football player.
Oh, Nagy, yeah, he threw dimes?
Dude, he was standing on the bench screaming. I'm like, what? This is our coach?
I love that. Now, the real question is, did he have hair?
No. Wait.
Oh.
No, no, no.
Oh, but, he was so a bald guy? So he had the Urlacher life going for him?
No, no, no. So he had the beard. He had the beard like he does now. But in his picture for, like, the regular season that they would show when doing highlights, he had no facial hair. So he looked way different. He looked like a complete weirdo. But Nagy, like, he was yelling at his coaches during the game what to call, who to get in, like, screaming at these guys, getting in their faces. I'm like, oh, my God. No wonder he's a coach. It was amazing. Awesome. That's I gotta find it for next episode. It was
Next episode. I guess we'll start with that.
Yeah,
we'll let the viewers in on a little throwback to Coach Nagy.
Yeah. Do you got anything else?
I'm good. Let's close this thing out for today. And next podcast, we have a guest coming on. First guest of the City Off Campus.
We're not gonna say it. You just have to tune in and listen.
Just have to tune in, listen.
We might
watch.
Tease it. We
like,
don't know.
Like, subscribe, follow the Instagram, City Off Campus, and we'll see you next time. Jack, close it out.
All right, guys, we will see you later.